We begin today with the Trayvon Martin case. And that case, of course, is about a 17-year-old boy. It's about a 28-year-old man named George Zimmerman, a man with a gun. It's about some inexplicably passive law enforcement in Sanford, Florida, and an enraged family, community, and now an enraged nation.
Zimmerman will go to trial. That does not stop racial profiling and rising violence in our country.
That was the Reverend Jesse Jackson calling once again for the arrest of 28-year-old shooter George Zimmerman. The outrage about the death of Trayvon Martin evokes some very old and tragic themes of racial suspicion in America. But there's also a whole new story emerging in a new racial and ethnic setting altogether. The Sanford, Florida of today is not the Sanford, Florida of two generations ago. And here to discuss how the Trayvon Martin case looks backward and forward in American history is Isabel Wilkerson, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. Isabel, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let me just say that very early on in this discussion, and I thought of you immediately when this happened, on the program, one of the astute commentators on the Trayvon Martin case compared what happened to Trayvon Martin to Emmett Till. And I immediately reacted by saying, wait a minute, Emmett Till was viciously beaten, and it was a situation where you were dealing with just overt, explicit racism at a very different time in America. But then I thought, no, no, Trayvon Martin was out of his own neighborhood. The Emmett Till echo relates to the fact that Emmett Till was not in a place where everyone knew his name and knew his face, and suddenly, boom, he becomes suspicious. Do you think that's the Emmett Till connection in your view?
I view the connection being that you have a young person, a teenager, who is attacked by someone who's very different from him. I see a comparison between him and the Amadou Diallo case in New York, where a man was had a cell phone and was viewed as suspicious merely because he had one. I think it has a lot more to do with a kind of mistaken identity or assumptions about someone not being in a place that one would expect him to be based on what he looks like.
And is the narrative then of Trayvon that when an African American leaves the neighborhood where he's well known, an African American male, that the assumption is suspicion almost wherever you are in the United States?
I think that there's generally the remaining echoes of a caste system in which it's the assumption that a person is outside of a place where one would be expected to belong that could endanger an individual, and it's a scary reality that appears to be the case.
And you add a gun to that reality, of course, and tragedy and violence is the result.
Absolutely.
So let's move forward then. There's also an element of the Trayvon Martin case that really shows that the communities that we live in are vastly different from what was the case a couple of generations ago in ethnic makeup and in the kinds of issues and narratives that people bring to the table. Just sort of sketch that out, and I've got some statistics here that I want to run by you.
Yeah, in this particular case, and which is reflective of changes throughout the country, this particular county, Seminole County, was undergoing and currently is undergoing a shift in the way the population looks like. And in this particular case, Latinos have in the last 10 years have overtaken African Americans in that county. For the first time, African Americans make up about 10% of the population there, and Latinos make up about 17%. So this is a shifting part of the region.
And while the media might view Latinos and African Americans in a place like Seminole County as having a lot in common, in fact, from the perspective of those communities, what they're sharing is struggle. And here's an interesting statistic. Latinos apparently harbor more negative feelings towards African Americans than African Americans do towards Latinos. 60% reported feeling that few or almost no blacks were hardworking or could be trusted. Only 10% of whites held that view. On the other hand, almost 75% of African Americans felt that Latinos were hardworking and could be trusted. What's that about?
Well, when Latinos come to the United States, they bring with them pre-existing assumptions about a hierarchy that exists here in the United States about who's on top and who's not. And part of it has to do with the caste system or the hierarchies in the places that they're from. They are coming from diverse populations where the pre-existing hierarchies still favor people who are in these Latino communities, Latino countries, the people who are white. And so when they come to the United States, they take on those similar assumptions with them, and they also see how things play out here in the United States as well. And they say to themselves, the researchers have found that they would prefer to identify with white Americans than with black Americans, with whom they actually might otherwise have many things in common.
Let me put on my social scientist hat for a moment. Give me a sense of where those statistics came from. What's the source of those surveys?
Those surveys are from political scientists. This particular survey that I referred to in the piece that I wrote came from Duke University, in which they studied the population of whites, blacks, and Latinos in Durham, North Carolina, which was a community that had one of the fastest-growing Latino populations in the country. And they wanted to see what was the impact that this had on that region and how were these groups going to be getting along or not.
Finally, Isabel Wilkerson, Sanford, Florida. Do you think years from today, a generation from today, we will remember Sanford as indicating a story of competing American populations in the 21st century in the same way that we recognize and remember Birmingham, Alabama, for instance, in the Civil Rights Movement?
Actually, I don't believe that. I believe that we have short memories, and I believe that while there might be reason to make that connection, I believe that this could be one of many places where such sad clashes could occur. I ended up, I wrote a book in which the individual, one of the main people in the book, was from the same area, Sanford, Florida, and actually had to leave Florida for New York in 1945 on the base because there had been a clash between that individual and white citrus grove owners, and it happened to have been in Sanford, Florida, that forced him to leave. And so, therefore, I think that with the passage of time, people, other places take center stage. This is what's getting our attention now, but this is not the only place where such things can occur.
Isabel Wilkerson, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.